Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Down with the sickness.
Oh, Brandon Carlo.
No, but that's a great deal. Trying to rein this into a serious take.
That's a cold open.
No, I love it. Welcome to Brews and Bruins Podcast. I believe it's episode 65 of season 2. The Hockey Podcast Network podcast presented by Bruins Diehard, sponsored by DraftKings. You've heard us talk about DraftKings if you've listened to like any episode in the past, any of the past 65 episodes at least. The leader in daily fantasy sports and how payday can come every day by entering their contests with huge cash prizes up for grabs. Making a lineup on DraftKings adds excitement to every single solitary night and is simple to do. Draft your lineup and feel
the
sweat
like never before. Wow, that was the cleanest one we've done in a while. Every moment means more with the DraftKings lineup on the line. DraftKings has paid out over $7 billion to users across all sports. DraftKings is the leader in daily fantasy sports, so there's no better place to get in on all the action. Now that you know how to play, download the DraftKings app and sign up using promo code THPN. New users will get a free entry with their first deposit. That's code THPN to get a free entry with your first deposit. Only at DraftKings, minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. My name is Drew Johnson. I'm here, as usual, with Cam Hasbrook and Chris Gear. And we have Kat Silverman back on, so you know it's going to be a good episode.
I don't know why she's agreeing to do this.
By the way, happy birthday to Chris Gear. If you're listening to this, it drops Tuesday on his birthday today. We have to pretend today is his birthday, but it's Monday, so not quite yet.
We're still drinking birthday beers, though. That counts.
I'm literally drinking a birthday beer. I'll get into it when we actually introduce the beers, but.
All right, well, Chris, do you want to introduce your beer?
Would love to introduce the beer. I'm drinking a Hoppy Birthday Pale Ale from Alpine Beer Company. My buddy Edgar picked him up and brought him to the beach the other day and let me bring him home. So I'm drinking one of those. I wish Theo would quiet down.
Happy birthday, too.
Yeah, it is indeed hoppy, and it is a pale ale. It's 5.3%. Mostly hop flavor. You can taste it, but it's not like a lot of depth of flavor or anything like that. Kind of reminds me of a session IPA. So taste will go with 14, and drinkability, you gain a little with the low alcohol content, but you lose a little with how kind of bitter and hoppy it is. So I probably wouldn't want to be drinking these all day. We'll go with 15.
Solid. Cam Hasbrook, what you got?
I'm drinking a few beers right now, but the one I'm going to review it's Saturday. I mean, it's Monday, but it's Saturday. I'm drinking Austin Street Pale Ale from right down the road. This is the Patina. It's one of their mainstays. I'm pretty sure I've had it on the pod before, so Lancey can go back and compare my ratings. But very good beer. It is 5.3%. Decent little kick to it. On the more bitter side, it sort of tastes like an IPA, but isn't too hoppy necessarily. It's just kind of bitter. Has a citrusy vibe to it a little bit, which is definitely nice. I appreciate that in more bitter beers. So give it a go here. Crispy on the taste, but start with the drinkability. I would say like I said, it is bitter, so that takes a little bit off of it, but it's not overly hoppy, so I'd give it probably a 23. Taste, it definitely has a pretty up and at you flavor to it, right? Hits the tongue, you can feel it dancing on there a little bit, so I'm going to give it like a like a 31 for flavor. And also, it tastes good, which is not included in our scale, but I do like to point that out, that it's a very good beer.
Well, Cam's tongue is a dance floor. I just wanted to say that to make it
that sounds illegal. I'm not sure how, but I'm pretty sure that broke a law.
Definitely an Elton John song about that somewhere.
Probably.
Your tongue
well.
Is a dance floor. Okay. Anyway, Kat, what are you drinking?
So I send Richie Flores out to pick up beer on Saturday, and then the Suns got like curb stomped. And so he had to like dash out and get it on Sunday, and said once he'd recovered, he picked up a Big Blue Van blueberry wheat, brewed in Lake Havasu City, Arizona, which you could hold me at gunpoint. I have no idea where that is. I just know that it's far from Phoenix, and I feel like weird shit always happens there. But they make a good beer. It's not as fruity as a lot of the fruit beers. My only requirements were that it was something kind of fruity and not a stout, because it's a Monday and I didn't want to be just like going hard on the stouts.
I want to be drinking fruit stouts.
So no, he almost picked up one that was called Morning Sex. That was, I think it was a stout. And so it was a porter. And so he nixed that one, but wanted me to have to say that on the pod. So joke's on him. I'm saying it anyway. I did anyway. Yeah, it's not super fruity for a fruit beer. A little on the heavier side, which, I mean, it's a wheat beer, that happens. 5.4% alcohol, so not too bad. On the side, it says cool, crisp, and funky. Not as crisp as I think they're advertising, but that's okay. On the drinkability scale, I give it like a 12 because it is a little on the heavier side. But on the taste scale, I'm going to go with Louis Erickson and Nick Ritchie here. Give it a 21.
Hell yeah.
Very nice.
So I hope you guys appreciate that I actually gave a player's number this time, because every time I come on, I forget about that. And I'm like, shit. So
that's not even really part of it. We just do it sometimes. Today.
Yeah. I came prepared. I did my homework.
She's like, I listened to your podcast for the first time. If you guys had to pick two out of the three of cool, crisp, and funky for a beer, which, I mean, cool's got to be one because you don't want a warm beer, I would imagine. Funky. So crisp or funky, which one would you prefer?
Funky.
Funky?
I feel like cool and crisp is like the advertising of Coors Light. They're just our beer doesn't have any flavor.
We got to bleep that out.
Yeah, well, Miller Coors is they're a company, so...
We're
just trying to get them on the pod.
I don't know.
Cool come and defend crisp yourself, Miller Coors.
Says hard cider. Cool and crisp says hard cider to me.
Oh, okay, so yeah, different.
If I hear that for a beer, I'm like, really? But I mean, it's good. It's just, I don't know if crisp is the word I'd use for a wheat beer, but that's okay. They tried.
Like funky also implies like some sort of weird
twist. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I'm expecting probably fruit in like a weird, you know, you're getting like passion fruit or something like that. But it's not going to be blueberry. I don't know if blueberry's funky. It's pretty.
I'm thinking like some sort of like weird, like wild yeast or something. Or like some kind
I think
of
it's because that's
fermentation process.
That's
the
beer.
Oh, wow.
Like,
that's
I think that's the can. So I think it's all indeed. The Arizona beers are wacky as hell. So there's nothing else.
Cool, crisp, and wacky.
As hell.
Anyway,
Drew.
I polished off that last beer so I could drink a Miller Lite.
Hey.
Let's go.
I'll drink a Miller Lite with you.
Oh my god.
All right.
Almost cold.
You can see those blue
almost cold beer.
Mountains.
I transferred it from the cooler to the fridge about 3 hours ago, and it didn't quite make it to cold in that time.
Drinkability, 37. I'm already halfway through it, and I just opened it. Partially just because I wanted to prove that it's drinkable, but also happy birthday, Chris. Taste. Now, do I be honest or do I like suck up to them?
Be honest and we'll bleep it out.
That's the same thing.
All right. Tasteability is like a 10 times 3.7. Haha.
Nailed it, Drew. Stuck the landing.
No. All right. Thank you. Yes. That's what I do. Landings and sticking them. Drew,
yeah,
Drew stuck the landing,
yeah.
Johnson.
Yeah. Drew now has two ski videos where he
worked out. Drew, I just want you to know I also polished my beard so I could grab a Miller Lite. So.
There we go. Hey. Good shit.
I don't have any Miller
Lite. So happy birthday, Chris.
Then send Richie to the store right now.
Yeah.
I should have shipped him some Miller Lite.
No.
So we have some hockey to talk about. The expansion draft is coming up, and recently...
Only if you're listening to this on Tuesday or early on Wednesday.
Otherwise, stay tuned for our riveting preseason preview coverage.
But 30 teams have released their protection lists. Vegas is exempt because they're new. I would imagine
sketchy. Like,
shouldn't be fair.
I was wondering about that. Yeah,
I understand. Like, okay, maybe they wrote the rule like just so they're not setting a bad precedent for other expansion teams. But I feel like if your expansion team makes the Stanley Cup final by the time the next expansion comes around, you're eligible.
Even like the playoffs.
Yeah,
like,
there's teams like
Buffalo that hasn't made the playoffs in like a fucking decade. And you know what I mean? You're going to tell me they're worse off than like Vegas right now?
In fairness, Buffalo is going to be offloading probably a contract that they don't need. So
that's probably fair. So maybe it's a balancing act then at that point. Like,
I feel like it's like Edmonton, where people say that we need to change the we keep having to change the draft lottery. Because they kept
still
winning.
Hasn't worked.
I feel like if you make your conference finals more than once before the next team comes along, you don't get an exemption. Like that's not fair.
I think if there's more than a year between, like if the following season another team enter, it's like okay, you're exempt. But I think, you know, after a little bit there, you're able to sign free agents, make trades, whatever, you're beefing up your team, then you should have to. I understand if it's the very next season, but beyond that, like, how long's it been now? Like, 3 seasons?
4.
Yeah, 4.
Like that, 3, 4. Oh, wow, 4. Yeah. Time flies 4. When you're
having fun.
I don't know. I haven't been doing anything the past year and a half, but neither has anyone else. Yeah, I think that's bullshit that they're exempt. But the Bruins were one of the teams to reveal their lists. Ooh.
Yeah, this is gonna be boring because I feel like the Bruins are in like a really weird, unique position where they don't have to give up anybody of value.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't want to like jinx it, but like I feel like that's mostly true.
Yeah,
it's completely true. I may have
tipped off my hot take on Twitter, but. Yeah. I think the worst case scenario for the Bruins is that Curtis Lazar gets taken. And like, if the worst case scenario, you're losing your fourth line center, not a bad situation.
There's like two polar opposite ends of the spectrum. There's Boston where like, oh, worst case you lose Curtis Lazar. And then there's Colorado where like best case, you only lose an oft injured Eric Johnson instead of Gabriel Landeskog. So
yeah.
This article I pulled up says that Taylor Hall and David Krejci and Tuukka Rask are available, but then they're not.
You can.
I think they're doing it like TJ Oshie.
You can take a UFA in expansion,
and then you'd have to sign.
But you have their negotiating rights, and that's it. So
yeah,
there are a couple of players. I didn't actually check all of the protection lists and analyze them, but I know there were a couple of players where they were thinking, you know, maybe it's in their best interest to, you know, protect Dougie Hamilton or something like that, where it's a guy who's going to be really coveted in free agency. And maybe you just want his rights so that, you know, you have, you know, the ability to negotiate with him first. But And it is a weird thing. Like, you saw the Rangers trade for Barkley Goodrow. And I feel like once you trade for the rights of somebody, especially if you're offering them a 6-year deal, with like $4 million a year, and they're a fourth liner, they're probably going to take it. There's just like a weird thing in hockey where hockey players are like, oh, this team wants me. Yeah, I'll sign there. But I also assume that there's some sketchy, under the table deals happening before those trades are made.
What kind of sketchiness? It sounds interesting. We should dive into that. All right, we're not gonna. I think the biggest surprise to me, not necessarily, well, Trent Frederick's protected, so I guess that's the biggest surprise. Like, not that he isn't good, but I'm just surprised over someone like, I don't know, like JFK, you know, the president.
I don't know or if like, JFK is eligible.
No, he is. He's
dead. Drew, I hate to break it to you, but
dude, this is
Jacob Forsbacka Carlson.
Just don't Google it, because this
or just like a player with like a little more, I don't know, like potential. Like, I think what we see from
Carlson in Sweden.
Oh, maybe he is. Yeah, because the pandemic and
yeah, I'm pretty sure he went to Europe.
Yeah, he probably went back to Europe. So I guess that makes sense. But I think like you know,
he is
older Nick Ritchie though, like with how he had performed. Like, I'm fine with Ritchie being exposed, and I'm fine with him going to Seattle. But I don't know. I was just surprised that the Bruins like management was like, yeah, let's expose Ritchie and keep Frederick around. Like, I don't think. If you left Frederick unprotected, I still think they're going to go for a guy like Lazan or Zaboral or something. So, I don't know. Maybe the Kraken will be like, yo, we need toughness. Toughness wins championships, blah, 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 blah. But, yeah, I really think it's going to be Lazan or Zaboral. Probably Lazan who winds up going to Seattle.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. I do agree with Chris, though. I think the worst thing for the Bruins right now probably would be Lazar, just because the Bruins are in the rare position that they do kind of have some they have center depth, but I guess with Coyle's last season, not as much as maybe you had hoped for a year ago. But, Drew, I do agree. When I was going down the list for the first time, Trent Frederick was the only one that I like stopped, and I was like, And then I was like, well, I guess so. Yeah, it makes sense. But, like, it was definitely the one that caught my eye, if you will.
Yeah, early on.
Jeremy Swayman.
Early on, I was wondering if they'd leave DeBrusk open, but then they signed him to that extension. It was kind of like, okay, they're probably not going to leave DeBrusk exposed. They seem a little invested.
Yeah, I wasn't too surprised by the Frederick keep, because he, at a certain point, you got to play politics too, and Frederick's kind of a fan favorite, and I don't know if Nick Ritchie qualifies as a fan favorite yet, but
what do you mean?
He won the fan popularity contest on
Bruins Twitter. He's definitely a popular player, but I don't know if like the greater fan base is like, oh, I love Nick Ritchie.
By greater fan base, you mean the ones who don't object themselves to the toxicity of Twitter because they don't have to?
The normal people, yeah.
Oh, there's plenty of older people on Twitter.
We have the people listening to our podcast.
Not the older people.
The normal people are older people.
Yeah, the normal people. Yeah, no.
Just based on our podcast, I don't think normal people or old people are listening to our podcast. Just based on our content.
I don't want to be a gatekeeping podcast either.
I'm not gatekeeping. I'm just guessing based on.
You want to be normal. If you want to be older, like if you have made the choice to be an older person, then
yeah, that's all you
listen to our podcast.
On my resume, I have Brews and Bruins under like, yo, I know how to do like audio editing, video editing and all that. But I also argue like I help run the social media and know how to like garner attention from our target audience. I still don't know who that target audience necessarily is.
Yeah. It's degenerates. No, our target audience is really literally just word. Patrick Laverty. It's all it is.
Yeah, really, it's like
and Patrick Mike Lancy, but Lancy's like part of our show, so he's not even an audience. So like pretty much just Patrick.
I have no idea. I don't think we have a demographic. I think it's just people who vibe with us.
Yeah,
I actually was like thinking about that earlier, like specifically what our demographic and how I would explain it, and like it's just like Bruins fans who like beer, I guess, like is the most obvious one given the title, but like that's a pretty. It's pretty expansive.
I do think there's a large, I think there's a large portion of the Bruins fan base that loves beer that absolutely hates our podcast.
Yeah,
so.
No, but that's the thing is like, that would be a lie, but I'm not sure how to like highbrow, like smart Bruins fans who enjoy, but you know what I mean? Like people who
I'm
have
on the podcast.
Hockey,
no,
like,
no
yeah.
Not smart.
Well, working knowledge. Yeah. There's a little bit of, there's a little bit of brightness that shines through once in a while. It's just, rare, but anyway, keep listening.
You know, like adjusting to the I love the cold open of the last episode where it was all like what I said, and at the end I was like, "Yeah, Chris, that was a sound take, though."
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so our demographic is people who vibe with Drew because we did do a fan vote when we had like 80 people who listened to this podcast, and they voted Drew the favorite host.
Wait,
I
was
voted least favorite.
Oh no! You were second. Chris was Cam was least. Yeah.
No, I said Drew is the favorite.
Yeah. I was.
Yeah, I didn't realize I won that.
Oh, you won by a lot, and Cam and I were duking it out for last.
For last, oh. Which I won last, by the way. So Chris,
I want to run another poll. I want to see. I want to see if last. It's changed.
You'd have to add Chanel and I though.
Yeah, fourth
we
option.
Should,
I was gonna
we
say
should also just add. Like a fake name and just see how that goes. Just see how that goes. People that like pretend to listen to our podcast, they're like, oh, I'm a big fan of like Mike. He's really great.
It's George.
It's Chris Johnson, Drew Hasbrook, and Cam.
Yeah, Peter. Just fuck them all up. What were we talking about again?
expansion draft. Oh, Kat, we want to talk about specifically goaltenders who were exposed because. When I heard that Price was being exposed, I mean, there's all that stuff with his contract. We'll see. I don't want to take that salary on. But how drastically do you think that changes the landscape compared to maybe who you expected to be taken if they were to be available for Seattle beforehand?
I don't think it's going to change it. If they really want to mess with Montreal, yeah, take Carey Price, go for it. But I mean, he's seeing a doctor. We don't know how healthy he is. I'm assuming he's got life left in him. He looked fine during the playoffs. I don't think he has his contract duration left in him, but that's okay. I think they'll have room. I think Seattle's going to have room for that. Just looking at the list of available goalies that the NHL put out a tweet, or it was an Instagram post that had a list of notable ones, which if you told me in like, I don't know, 2018, that the list of goalies who were available was going to include Ben Bishop, Jonathan Quick, Carey Price, Matt Murray, Martin Jones, and Braden Holtby, I'd be like, get the fuck out of here. What? and naturally they all are, which, okay. I wouldn't touch 90% of that list with a 10-foot pole.
Jonathan Quick.
I think it's cute that that San Jose exposed Martin Jones. Like nobody's gonna touch that. San Jose doesn't even want to touch that. I still think Chris Drieger is gonna be who they end up taking, just because he's not elite, right? Like he's not this all-star goaltender, but he's fine. And he's capable of playing. No, he's UFA.
Okay.
He's older. He's 28 or 29 at this point. Okay. I was close. So me minus a few years. But
that's not too
I wouldn't
a goalie
take,
though, right? Like
it depends. I think Matt Murray, I think it depends on where they are in their development. Cause like Matt Murray, he's on the exposed list, which first off, how hard does everybody have to be laughing at that contract extension Ottawa signed last summer? They traded for him and were like, we're gonna sign him for like 5 or 6 years. He's gonna be fine. Like not fine. He's so bad. And he's younger than I think Chris Drieger is.
I think he's 26.
But I also, how do you know all this?
I see a thing and it's in my brain somewhere.
I'll say Chris has a lot of like weird age. Like? I feel like, yeah.
Well, it's because amazing he's turning 31 now. So he's like, how many players are younger than me?
Wise, yeah.
Yeah, he's wise. He sits out on his front porch and like feeds like.
Well, someone's following along, and I've definitely gotten both of those ages wrong. And someone's following along, watching and going, "Oh, he's losing it in his old age."
And we're all like, "Yeah, he's definitely. How does he know all this? He's just wrong." Like,
how does he know?
I remember when I was 26, a goaltender for the Pittsburgh Penguins. And...
Okay, Doc.
Yeah. Doc and my old person voice is the same.
Yeah, was that supposed to be Doc? Good.
No, it was supposed to be an old person.
So, Chris, I'm sorry, Chris. Matt Murray.
No, you're not.
I'm really not sorry. No, that's a guy who I don't think can bounce his game back, right? Like we've seen him try. He went to a no pressure situation in Ottawa. Nobody had any delusions that team was going to be even a passable franchise last year, and he still couldn't put it together. Braden Holtby on the decline. I know that Vancouver was once again a very hard team to play behind, but he performed poorly. Maybe if you think that Jonathan Quick bounced back well enough, because he did over the last 2 years, he's been better. He was one of the two worst goaltenders in the league for like 3 years in a row.
It's a pretty low bar to clear.
It's a very low bar, but like if you want a veteran presence there who has like, you want your Stanley Cup rings, go for it. But I wouldn't touch Ben Bishop
Edmonton
either.
That's
another
guy
who, they need that spot for Mike Smith. Like that is the Mike Smith shaped cutout on the bench.
I thought they were just trying to add cup rings.
They're more interested in really old goaltenders than they are in really old goaltenders with cups. Because they really seem to like Mike Smith. I've heard they're potentially bringing him back, which is amazing. Like, good for them.
Good for Mike Smith.
Good for Mike Smith. He's making his bank as one of the worst goaltenders the league's seen.
Doesn't every NHL goaltender technically have a cup?
Yeah, it's to prevent injury.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Good joke, Drew.
Thanks. Where's the laugh track? Where's the laugh track? Where's the applause? Oh, I need it. Feed my ego.
Sorry. Oh, it's way better.
That was the penalty strike or something like that. I don't know what that was. Yeah.
Fun fact, guys. Earlier, like I think it was after the last episode. Chris revealed to me that his favorite thing in the world is dad jokes. He was like, "I'm really good at making jokes that make you cringe." And
I didn't say it was
now
my
he's
favorite
got, like,
thing.
Drew involved. No. You said it was funny. No, you said it was your favorite thing to do to a friend.
Okay.
So, no, he actually meant jokes about people's dads.
A dad?
That was Sarah's favorite, actually. Like,
my dad's room next door.
A dad walks into a bar.
It's not about specific dads. It's just like, you know, your everyday average dad.
Yeah.
Your everyday average dad walks into a bar.
I don't know. The exposed list for goalies is weird. If I'm Seattle, I mean, people have said it. If I'm Seattle, I'm going to teams who exposed goalies that they hope are just too expensive and saying, hey, like Carey Price, you go to Montreal and you say, hey, I talked to a couple teams. They'd be willing to flip Carey Price for X. What can you give us to not do that? And I see what they're willing to give me, kind of like what Vegas did, where they got half of their like top six players by telling teams, hey, we're going to take this guy. What will you give us instead? I think that Kaapo Kähkönen's kind of a fun one. I think he gets forgotten about a lot because nobody gives a fuck about the Minnesota Wild. But they protected Cam Talbot. I thought that was kind of surprising. He's older. He has more mileage. Kaapo Kähkönen's supposed to be a really good, promising up-and-comer. And he's performed pretty well, right? Like, he's done pretty well for them. And instead, they exposed and kept Talbot around. That's who, even if they don't plan on taking him, if I'm Seattle, I say, hey, what'll you give me for him?
If you get to keep gasoline in my room, by the way. So if I start passing out, call 911.
Call 911.
I went to check if the stove was on, and it's not.
No, it's because that Miller Lite is straight gas, bro.
Yeah.
Kat, I have seen the rumblings on Twitter from prominent NHL Twitter journalist guys and such that there may be serious rumblings about Carey Price going to Seattle. So I am kind of curious whether or not they will be serious about that. Like, I mean, I obviously don't think anybody's doubting that Carey Price is still a good goalie. Not at what he was necessarily. And I think of that crop has some of the higher potential as somebody who doesn't understand goaltending nearly as well as Kat. Maybe just tell me I'm wrong, but I think the biggest concern there is like the contract and then this potential knee injury thing, right? Are the two concerns there?
Right.
I would say the other concern is being a really bad goaltender for like the last 4 years.
How dare you? Remute.
Yeah. Stop, Chris. Give me the stop, Chris button.
No, I've seen that floating around, and I mean that's where he's from. He's from the West Coast. Obviously, he's from north of the border. But that's his family's from out there. He'd be close to where he spends his summers anyway. He enjoys being out there. I think somebody posted a video from I think it was at an All-Star game a couple years ago where he talked about how much he'd love to see a team go to Seattle because he loves it there and he loves visiting and he loves walking around there. And so I think he'd enjoy it there. I think he'd be a good fit there in the same way that Marc-Andre Fleury was a really good fit for Vegas. And that contract is really the biggest obstacle outside of the health concern, obviously. I think he's a good voice to have around, even if he's not what he used to be, right? Like, you look at some of the more veteran goaltenders who can help mentor younger guys who are still capable of playing, right? Like, we're not looking at the guys who can't stop a beach ball. We're looking at what Jonathan Quick was able to do last year, where he played capable games. He was a good mentor to Jack Campbell, who then went on and basically stole Freddie Anderson's job. There are weird things that will likely happen. I think if Carey Price goes to Seattle, nobody should be shocked by it. But I think they'd also probably take one of like Kapo Kakkonen, Chris Drieger. I know that I'm trying to think of if anybody else like worthwhile is exposed. A lot of free agents are exposed, obviously. Like Antti Raanta exposed by the Coyotes, no intention of bringing him back. Jaro Halak exposed, no intention of going back to Boston. So guys like that I wouldn't necessarily waste a pick on unless they know they want to sign them. But I don't know. I think as smart as I like to think I am about goaltenders, Alex Mandrycki, who is the data analyst who's in charge of all the stats over in Seattle, is one of the smartest people I've ever met. Talking with her was like one of the most heartwarming things that's ever happened to me at a draft, and also one of like the most humbling experiences because I realized just how much dumber than her I am. So I won't even pretend.
Extra humbling for us knowing about that.
She's operating on like another planet from us. My goal is to get like a name drop for her on every Brews and Bruins I'm on until she finally like writes me and tells me to stop. Which I think is going to be never, because hopefully she doesn't listen to my podcast episodes. No, I think she's got some big things planned with cap compliance too, and with figuring out where they want to add a big contract locker room kind of guy and where they want to add cheaper talent. I think there's cheaper talent out there to be had. I do think that Bill Armstrong in Arizona kind of thwarted one of the possibilities. There was a lot of talk about Seattle taking Aiden Hill. He played right around there. I think he played for the Portland Winterhawks in the Dub back when he was playing junior hockey. So he's familiar with the area. He likes being there. I think he's from Alberta. And he's a passable NHL backup. And so Arizona said we could lose him for free, or we could trade him to San Jose for a second round pick and get someone else for us to expose, which they did. They got Josef Korenash, who I think is never going to see NHL ice for them. But with that one gone, that obviously enabled San Jose to then expose Martin Jones. That'd be a fun one to see. I'd love to see Martin Jones go up the coast and turn his career around. He seems like a nice guy.
Get him
I don't think he's capable of it, but like if he does, I think that'd be good for him, right? But that's all I got there.
All right. Well, I think we kind of like danced around it, but if I you kind of did mention, I guess your pick would be Dreiger, you said?
Yeah, Chris Dreiger. Okay. Which I believe I said it as Chris Dreiger on something, and then somebody told me I was wrong. And so I looked it up, and I think I'm saying it wrong now too.
I had been saying Dreiger for like the 3 weeks after he was good, and then I heard somebody say Dreiger on a podcast, and I was like, that's not how that's spelled. There's no way it's pronounced that way. And then I watched Panthers games and they sang Dreiger. So
it is Dreiger. Okay.
I guess we're just ignoring the D in the middle of the name.
The silent D. Yeah, that happens.
The goalie that the Coyotes picked up, Yosef Korenash. We looked that up before Richie and Corey recorded two nights ago. And because they didn't know how to pronounce it. And it's Korenash, but it's spelled K-O-N. Or K-O-R-E-N-A-R. It ends in an R, and it's pronounced Korenash. So.
No, oh, yeah. I didn't know how to pronounce Alex Nedeljkovic's name until round two, round three, somewhere around there.
I can spell that one without looking it up now, and I consider that, like, I put that on my resume. I don't put my podcast on my resume. Nobody needs to hear that, but that I can spell
it. Back to nine and took me a long time.
Did you put Alex Nedeljkovic's name at the top? Like, you're supposed to put your own name.
Yeah, no, because I think that implies that's my name too, and I think that's gonna get me hit with a restraining order. So no,
his name was my name. What's too. My name?
There you go.
Christ, and that's us singing out. No, there's some other stuff to talk about too.
Well, before we get off of the expansion draft, I did want to like. Kat mentioned cap compliance and stuff, and the one thing on. Carey Price is it doesn't seem like there are a ton of really big contracts out there that are enticing. So I think the best player available is probably Yanni Gourde. He has like a 5.5, 5.7 something. And there are guys who have low term high cap hits that are kind of like, yeah, sure. We could take on Mark Giordano for a year, but
telling me you don't like, you don't think that Shea Weber's contract is super palatable, right?
Yeah, not so much.
Or do you just think he sucks?
I do think he's better than PK Subban now, but the weird twist of that trade ended up being that Montreal kind
of both of them.
That was a weird trade, just in general. Surprised that. I'm surprised it kind of worked for Montreal, trade, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. My favorite trade that everyone loved at the time was the Ryan Johansson, Seth Jones trade. And now it turns out that they're both kind of bad. So Ryan Johansson also, I believe, exposed for this draft. So
is it just flew right out of my head. I was going to say there was somebody else from one of the big trades that got a they got exposed. Pretty much everyone funds exposed. The Vladimir Tarasenko hit. Do you think they'll take him?
I don't know.
That's a cap hit.
$7.5 million is a lot. Yeah. I think that's another one where it's like, maybe that's the only situation where the risk is worth it. Cause if they're taking on, like you said, there's a balance there. If you're taking on one big contract, that's somewhere where you have to not take a big contract from some other team. But I mean, if you're not taking on Mark Giordano, then yeah, sure. Maybe take the risk on Tarasenko and see like, hey, maybe he's still that 30 goal scorer and we can get him for without having to give up any assets.
I don't know why they do that when they have like Lou Lamoriello excites everyone, right? Like he does these things and they're like, wow, he's so good. He works so well with all the other GMs. And then he protected Matt Martin and Cal Clutterbuck and exposed Josh Bailey and Jordan Eberle, which that's if you're taking like a higher-ish cap.
Yeah, I would
take Jordan Eberle in a heartbeat. Like, I still don't understand that one.
I was reading through the list without looking at who New York had protected with the Isles, and I just reading through the exposed list, and I was like, damn, are the aisles that deep that they're like,
No, nope.
I kind of thought about it, and I was like, wait, then who are they protecting?
They were just worried that Seattle was trying to construct the best fourth line in hockey or whatever.
Yeah, it can't happen. Yeah, all right, that's fair.
Apparently they're so cap-strapped that – because they made the Nicoletti trade, right, to try and dump some cap, and then they made the Andrew Ladd trade where they literally didn't get anything back from the Coyotes, and they gave away a second-round pick this year, a second-round pick next year, that depending on how that goes – they have multiple second round picks available right now. It's going to be one of the better of them. And then like either a second or third round pick that year, or the following year. So they gave up multiple like mid to high round picks to offload cap space and got like, they didn't even get like a warm body in return. They got nothing.
Yeah. It's been interesting because there haven't been a lot of, or any panic trades to Seattle to entice them to take anybody else.
Not yet. I feel like it's all going to come in the morning on Wednesday.
But we have seen some like weird panic moves. That's especially in Minnesota, buying out maybe two of the worst contracts in the league's history.
At the same time, while they were on the phone with each other. Beautiful.
Well, I mean, it's you know, you got to go for that symmetry because they did sign them at the same time. Yeah, that's shitty to the players, but I guess like if you're stuck in Minnesota and you're getting paid extra for to go somewhere else, it's not too bad. But I mean, like especially with Zach Parise, where he's like from Minnesota and signed there in very intentionally. Is Ryan Suter also from Minnesota?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
If he's not from Minnesota, he's from one of those other like flyover states.
Wisconsin. Wisconsin sounds right. I'm not going to...
From the land of the ice and snow.
You're saying back like confidence that you haven't looked up at all. So I'm going to look that one up at least.
Okay.
to go with all the goalie ages that you've memorized.
but those buyouts are really interesting because I think those moves were made so they could keep Matt Dumba. And sure, Matt Dumba's a good player. Like maybe wouldn't want to expose him, but also you're taking on so much money for so many years just to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, at some point you got to wonder whether it's worth it.
I think in 2024, they're really going to be finding out that it wasn't worth
it.
They're going to hate it. I think they're banking on that cap finally going up though, right? They're banking on at some point the league has to start making some sort of money again. Because apparently, like, the U.S. doesn't care about COVID, so we're probably full capacity
when the Omega variant comes around in 2023, that cap's not going up anymore.
They're not going to be worried about the players at that point, because there's going to be no NHL. So first off, you are correct. He is from Madison, Wisconsin, which now I trust everything you say. You could lie. You can lie your face off the rest of the podcast. That's all it took. I believe the rest of it. I kind of like that they did it though, from a petty perspective, because I don't know if you guys saw Matt Dumba's Instagram story after it happened. Somebody posted a screenshot of it, which once again, I'm begging the players to stop posting things on their Instagram stories that they don't want the world to see. And it was just like a scene of like a peaceful lake somewhere. And he's like, feeling especially good today. And that was all he posted.
Yeah.
Like I'm here for that kind of petty shit show. Like that's absolutely what I'm here for. So I enjoyed it.
I just love that Ken Holland went out and got Duncan Keith and had no salary retained whatsoever, had to give up assets, tied up his second round pick for next year for some reason because he felt like adding in a kicker. And now Ryan Suter's available and will probably be cheaper than $5.5 million.
I think just flashing back to Tarasenko, I do see Seattle taking him just because even with the salary, it's only like two more years and then you can either just part ways or re-sign him for something different if he fucking sucks, or
you know, as an expansion team, I know like Vegas was just absolutely exceeded expectations, and we're like, we're a cup winning team right now. But I don't
I do have a question about that though, because he has the no move clause, and he waived it for, he has like a 10 team no trade list or whatever. Does that mean that like he waived it for Seattle, or is Seattle just like?
I think he just waived it for Seattle, similar to Price waiving it just for the expansion. But like, I think that's like just so low risk.
Prices will kick back in, so they can't necessarily trade him. I think Tarasenko's would likely be the same thing. Although a lot of that also is, it's contingent on the team. Because I remember, I think it was PK Subban, when he got traded, the team had the option of honoring the remainder of his no movement clause or not, because it had been negated, and they said no.
Correct.
and he wanted to get out, like he wanted to be done with Montreal, and that's, I think, Vladimir Tarasenko's at that point with St. Louis for what sounds like understandable reasons. I feel like that's a good gamble for them, right? It's like you said, it's 2 years. My guess is that injury wise and if he's finally gotten the treatment that he claims he actually needed, we'll know by next year if he's capable of continuing to play for years or if he's done. I feel like it's not going to be 2 years and then maybe he'll keep playing or not. It's like, we're going to know next year if he's capable 29 of playing.
He's not like, yeah, it's, he's either done or he's not, I think. And shoulder injuries, especially for dudes whose calling card is their shot.
His goals.
That's kind of a deal breaker there. I love the guy. He's been one of my favorite hockey players for a while, but the games that he played this past year were not very good. And he's always been very not good defensively. So if he's not playing well offensively, that's an extra issue. But I think that there are so few 30 goal scorers in the league that, you know, if you take that gamble and you have the cap space and you bake that into your strategy, like Drew said, it's a good gamble.
I think it's a good gamble too, because he'd probably get first line minutes. And
how many first line guys are available in this?
Exactly.
Draft?
He's definitely one of the only first line guys available. So it's like, go for it. If it doesn't work out, whatever, just blame it. You're an expansion team. It didn't work out. You can part ways with them down the road, really quickly down the road. But I do think Tarasenko should come to Boston just because we got the doctors here, man. We got the hospitals. You can get great care.
You got Donnie Del Negro.
Great. We got a good healthcare system in Mass. Like, let's go. Let's go, Tarasenko. You know, you're going to get the treatment you deserve. Yeah. We do. We got Romney care.
He should come to Arizona. This is where we have some of the best orthopedic doctors in the world. So we have so many old people.
You have some of the best latter-day goal scorers.
This is true.
That's a Phil Kessel thing.
I know. I figured that's who you were referencing. No, we have a ton of really good orthopedic doctors here in Arizona, because there are a lot of knee replacements here in Arizona. A lot of hip replacements, lots of new shoulders.
Here in Maine, too, yeah. Is
the perfect place. I was going to say, where the old people go.
This is definitely probably the two oldest states here, Maine and Arizona. Probably, yeah. I know Maine's the oldest state. I don't know about Arizona. I wouldn't be surprised if Arizona or Florida probably.
It's not Florida. Yeah.
Arizona. I don't know. My thoughts are like desert colonies don't.
Oh, oldest is in. I thought you meant like the oldest state in the union.
No,
it's like what? No, they've been like mid 1800s because
as far as population goes,
took it away from Massachusetts.
Definitely not Arizona. We're state 48 in terms of being added to the union and in education.
Nice.
That's symmetry right there.
So there's some more stuff.
This is the symmetrical podcast. We've had a couple references to symmetry. Kat replaced me on my birthday podcast a year ago. Kat's here today. This is all about symmetry.
Bruins re-signed Brandon Carlo. I don't think
I think that happened after we recorded the past few episodes.
Yeah, like a lot of shit happened between the last time we recorded and now. Cam released a bonus episode and didn't tell anybody.
Well, he told me.
Yeah, no, you were the only one that didn't know by the end. I didn't tell Drew at first, and then I realized I kind of had to, and then, yeah, it was pretty much you were the only one in the dark.
I kind of had to.
Oh, no, I'm not, to be clear, I'm not talking about the Cat and Chanel episode. I'm talking about the one that we recorded on Monday last week.
Oh, yeah, no, that one
just, like, was recorded on Saturday night.
You released it at, like, midnight on Saturday. And just, like,
well, I released it for Sunday, yeah, and then I was like, I'm going to go tweet this out. And then, like, I had stuff to do in the morning, and I was like, I'll do it at work. And then, like, shit hit the fan at work. And then, like, I came home, and I was like, oh, it's, like, midnight, and no one knows this is a thing, so... Let's tweet it out. We'll just tweet every episode out like 3 days after we release it now.
Which is why listeners need to follow us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and wherever, because then you don't need to see our dumbass tweets. You can just listen.
That is how I found out about it. I was sitting there like waiting for Richie so he
waiting
and Corey
for our
could
Tuesday
record
podcast to there. Drop.
Yeah, waiting for the Tuesday one on a Saturday night. And I saw a Spotify notification. I was like, that never happens. What is this? And I look and it's a new episode. I was like, what?
I've also never seen a Spotify notification.
So that's what happens when you follow the Brews and Bruins podcast on Spotify.
Random alert. Maybe.
One
midnight on
Saturday.
But
you'll get those notifications.
Hey, you feeling lonely at night?
Just like your drunk ex will text you at midnight.
But Brandon Carlo's contract, I think that's pretty dope. The Fulcrum is back.
Yeah, we should
and,
talk about that for sure.
That's a good salary for him. That's a good length. I'm down with the commitment. Down with the sickness.
Oh, Brandon Carlo.
No, but that's a great deal. Trying to rein this into a serious take.
That's a cold open.
No, I love. Yeah, it is. That's the name of the episode. Oh, wow. Carlo.
Down with the Fulcrum.
Down with the Fulcrum.
I'm getting down with the Coco.
I said Coco, but I meant Fulcrum. That's just my sad tears for Conan O'Brien leaving us for HBO.
To Nick Lancey, who I found out during that period that he is like the biggest fan of Conan O'Brien.
Yes, I'm with him on that. I'm Team Coco.
Yeah, that was the thing I didn't know about Lancey until I saw his Instagram story for like those 3 days. I was like, wow, okay. You never once watched an episode of Conan O'Brien, but
you're missing out because Conan O'Brien.
I've seen YouTube clips. I think like one of my all-time favorite YouTube videos is the like him and Dave Franco made dating profiles together.
Mm-hmm.
And, like just went
and
out on
dates and then swiped for each other and shit. in terms of late night talk shows, Conan O'Brien just definitely the best in my opinion.
Yeah, but also like I'm asleep
in the modern era.
I'm asleep before those come on the West Coast. So
cuz you're 80.
Cuz you're old. Yeah.
Yeah. checks out.
But Brandon Carlo definitely worth that price. Speaking of late night talk shows, Brandon Carlo would be great on one, but also definitely worth the price. I mean, he could be a top line defensive like shutdown defenseman on a lot of teams in the NHL. I think he could. I think he's not going to be like a star, but like on a shitty team. Yeah, he could hold his weight on a top.
I was going to say Chris is shaking his head no, but like I've had to watch the Arizona Coyotes, I've had to watch the Vancouver Canucks, I've had to watch the Edmonton Oilers, the Pacific Division, and then like a big chunk of the Central. He'd be a top pairing guy.
Yeah, easy. I'm not saying
Chicago,
like on a
with Chicago.
I'm not saying on like
the best defender in Chicago by a landslide.
Yeah, I'm not saying on like a cup contender. On a cup contender, he is a middle pair D, and that's what he is with Boston, and he's a really good middle pair D. So I think that is well worth it. I think he's really a part of this recipe on the Bees defense for a long time. And like you got McAvoy and you got Carlo. I think those are the two names that are going to really stick around on this Bruins D-core. I mean, Grzelcyk is great too. Who knows what could happen down the road, but I really think they're going to be holding on to McAvoy and Carlo, and that contract proves it.
I would prioritize Grzelcyk in that, but yeah. I mean, so I think the thing with Carlo is the way the NHL has been going over the past like decade, you kind of want to transition away from guys who are like only good in their defensive zone and can't like get the puck out of their defensive zone. But if you pair him with somebody who can, like Mike Riley, then it could be really effective. And yeah, you need guys like that on the penalty kill too. I mean, he's one of the biggest reasons why the Bruins have had a really effective penalty kill over the last few years. And I think 4.1 or whatever million dollars he got, that's a super fair cap hit. I wouldn't be calling for saying like Don Sweeney is the best GM in the league because he locked down this contract. I think the two camps were, how could you possibly sign this dude to that long of a contract when he's had concussion issues? And I mean, just look at Patrice Bergeron, like it can work out totally fine. And also the other camp is, wow, like this dude's one of the best lockdown defensemen in the league. You just got to steal. And nah, he's like an Adam Larson, like kind of dude where he's, he definitely improved his offensive game a little bit this past year, but also it's a small sample size given the injuries. I don't know how much you can really rely on that, but yeah, I mean, if he continues to develop, his defensive game did take a hit this past year too. So it got to find out if that's like a trade-off that he made or if that's something where like maybe he can maintain those gains on the offensive end and still like bring back his defensive game.
Yeah, I think he's definitely like obviously most reliable as a purely defensive defenseman, but I think it's maybe a little overlooked. I think he's very strong at moving the puck. Maybe not quite as good as somebody like Charlie McAvoy or Matt Grizzly when he's really rolling at moving the puck up ice. But I think Carlo is somebody who you can trust to at the very least make responsible plays coming out of the zone. I wouldn't quite put him in that dynamic like breakout defenseman category, but I think he's reliable in most cases to get the puck out of the zone. So even if he's not necessarily relying or adding points wise offensively, which we did see some more of last year, and I do like that kind of thought process, Chris, of like determining whether that was kind of a trade off of, all right, he's going to be a little bit less conservative in the D zone to drive that offense. I think there's a little bit of a trade off there. That'd be okay. But I still think he can contribute offensively, just getting the puck up the ice to begin with. I think that's something that he's been pretty strong with. So I'm a big time Carlo guy. I had somebody at work tell me that they weren't thrilled about the contract because Carlo, quote, just didn't do it for him. And I was like, nah, like, I know he's not like a first sexy, off, like fifth 20 goal scorer on the DN, but like, he's a very strong,
also very good looking man.
Also very, and his dogs are fucking
beautiful, man. Well, like too, who says, who says that Brandon Carlo doesn't do it for them?
Long, yeah, no, tall, and handsome.
So I do have an interesting question, though, because back when we were all writing for THW together, I believe we did a roundtable with BSC because there were some big trade rumors going around that Gabriel Landeskog was going to be on the move. And one of the guys that Colorado was targeting was Carlo, because Carlo, everyone loves trading for someone who's from where they play or whatever. So yeah, shouts to Charlie Coyle, but
it's ironic like making fun of that as a Bruins fan.
It's the funniest thing because it's just like anytime a Boston guy is available, like he's gonna go to the Bruins because
Jack Eichel's taking the home count discount, dude. 4.25, 10 years, it's gonna be fine.
But looking back on it, would you have made that deal if it was straight up Brandon Carlo for Gabe Landeskog? Because I think I would.
Yes. Yes.
What? What?
Yes.
How long ago was it?
He would have been the Taylor, like obviously he's a completely different player than Taylor Hall, but he would have been the new Milan Lucic for David Krejci.
But he would have been better than you get Taylor more Hall. Isn't he fucking nasty?
Yeah, he's pretty nasty. But at the time, he was in kind of like a big slump offensively, and that was when Colorado
comes out of it with Krejci.
Yeah. That was when Colorado was like the worst team in the league, and everyone was like, wow, we got to tear the shit down. Like, maybe Nathan MacKinnon isn't Sidney Crosby. Maybe maybe Gabe Landeskog isn't that good. And then they, you know, obviously.
This was a while ago. I thought you meant this past year.
This was like 3 years ago.
Not a chance. No.
Yeah, take Landeskog.
I think
for 3 years of like if they'd managed to keep him around for those years, yeah, because he looked really good. But now he's taken a step back.
I mean, speaking of handsome men, yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of nice getting to see him out on the West Coast. We're going to get to see him in Seattle now, though. No, but I do think that Colorado could have, at the time, used a Brandon Carlo. Although, interestingly enough, they haven't added one, right? Like, I mean, the closest thing they...
Well, no one can replace Carlo.
No one's as good as Carlo, I know.
What, like Eric Johnson?
Yeah, Eric Johnson, maybe, but he's not even that stay-at-home. Like, he's almost got the same kind of energy as, like, a Tyler Myers, who that Eric Johnson loves rushing the offensive zone.
I was thinking Ekman-Larsson.
Yeah, actually, that's a really good but substantially more physical than Oliver Ekman-Larsson, substantially. Eric Johnson loves hitting people, but
he is missing his two front teeth.
He is, and he hates putting the fakes in.
All I want for Christmas is my two front teeth.
He did give a good interview about that one time where he talked about like how he could put in his teeth, but like it's annoying and people like his smile anyway. And I was like, that's true, I do. But no, I think Colorado could have used that, right? Like he would have been a good addition back when they still had Tyson Barrie in his peak, back when they had Eric Johnson less injury prone, although he's always been a little injury prone. Looking at it more recently, I mean, they have so many good additions to their decor. They have Bowen Byram, they have Cale Makar, who's kind of like their Charlie McAvoy, right? Like, except maybe a little better. How dare I, know. They have Ryan Graves, who's fantastic, which they got in like just an absolute fleecing of a three-way trade. I at the time I probably would have done it. I don't think Colorado would have though, because they were I was so bullish on Joe Sakic being a GM. I thought he was gonna be garbage, and I'll be the first person to admit when I'm very wrong, and that was it. I was super wrong. Like he's one of the most effective GMs, and I think he would have.
What if you weren't the first person to admit that you were wrong? Like, what if someone else was
on Twitter? I certainly am. So
admitting that you were wrong for you.
Oh no, that happens every day. You guys have all seen Izzy, so my 4-year-old tells me I'm wrong day after day. So, no, I probably would have done it at the time. I did want to, while you guys were talking about like the, whether he's a stay at home and if he's good, and I think he's the only way you can be a defensive defenseman right now. I think Brandon Carlo is proof that having that stay at home defender, quote unquote, right, is something feasible moving forward, because he does play it a different way from Nick Hjalmarsson and from like the Zabinek Mahaliks and Anton Strahlman. Anybody remember Dennis Seidenberg? I do.
That's the next name I was going to say.
German Hammer.
Dennis Seidenberg.
Right out of your brain there through the computer screen.
So no, amazing. One of my favorites. That was Jersey.
I wish I did. Stephen
Camper, number 44.
Jesus Christ.
Well, you have the Stephen Camper hat right now.
No, I don't.
I know. I'm kidding.
He's 44.
Oh, you're right. Wasn't he 47 early on? He was 47 early on in his career because they had Seidenberg. Like
before Krug? Yeah.
Before Krug, yeah.
I mean, probably. Yeah. BC.
No.
BK, before Krug.
Well, that wouldn't have been as funny, Drew.
He was 47 on the Rangers. So.
Can we let Kat make her point?
I'm sorry. I'm just saying. I was just protecting myself. That's all.
That's your first mistake, is assuming you can podcast. Now, I think Brandon Carlo's the most effective form of a defensive defenseman that's offered under the age of, what, 30, 35 in the NHL right now? Because I can't think of another more defensively minded, like, in terms of gap coverage and Yeah, but he's over 30 now.
Is he?
He's not a young guy anymore. He's an 09 draft pick, so yeah.
Okay.
That's they're all 30, nearing on 31 this year. Don't ask me how I know that. That's the high school graduating class of 2009. No, I think among those younger guys, we've seen, what is it, Logan Stanley, the Winnipeg Jets pylon, who managed to score a couple goals during the playoffs. Didn't manage to win Winnipeg a game, but one of those stay-at-home guys just couldn't figure out how to move his feet. Other than that, looking at all the good young defenders in the league right now, you look at like Adam Fox, Cale Makar, Charlie McAvoy, Jacob Chychrun, like the guys who are all 25 and under, give or take, they all play either a really good two-way game or a little bit of an offensively minded, like a power play captain type game. And then there's Brandon Carlo, who I think is kind of like a little unicorn right now. So good for him.
A unicorn in the like the mildest sense.
In the type of game he plays.
When I think of unicorn, I'm thinking of like NBA players like Giannis, where he's just like
no, very different.
6'10" point guard.
But think about it, like I'm trying to think of a good defensively minded like stay at home first young defender who's under the age of 30, and like I can't think of one. They're all like Adam Larson's pretty much the youngest of all the ones that play that style of game, and he's like I said, he's if he's not class of 09, he was class of 2010, so he's nearing 10 11 12 years in the league now, which is not a young guy anymore, unfortunately.
R.I.P. to me.
R.I.P. to both of us. R.I.P. to both of us.
Since this is getting a little bit long, I did want to switch topics.
I didn't want to stop you from doing that, but I did have things to say, and then we talked for another like 25 minutes.
So first of all, Chris, is your grandmother's birthday July 3rd? If so, your mother followed me on Instagram.
Well, all my grandparents are dead, so.
Well, was it?
I feel like you're trying to steal my bank information.
All right, well, are you and your friend two young dappers or whatever was the caption? Yeah, two dapper young men going out in the town. Did you do that on December 31st, 2019? I don't know. I think your mom just followed me on Instagram, so I'm looking through her posts, and you're one of her followers,
You could say her name.
Oh, Claudia?
That's my mom's name.
Oh, there you go. I didn't want to reveal, like, too personal of information other than your
grandmother's birthday. Now we're revealing your
name. Well, yeah, don't mention her maiden name on this podcast. We're good.
I don't. It doesn't reveal her maiden name.
She's followed. Yeah, I understand that. That was a joke. She's followed our podcast Instagram account for a while, so.
Well, I just followed her personal. Like no! I just that was from the. I thought she followed my personal account from the Brews and Bruins account. So I followed her back from the Brews and Bruins account.
Now it's weird.
Finally, no, it's fine. It's funny. Anyway, the other
Drew was so touched. He was like, "I can't believe your mom knows who I am and followed me on Instagram." Nope.
Well, Mrs. Gear, it is at Doob Schmoob. Go for it.
Oh man, I hope she's listening to this. I don't know if she does.
Nashville Predators prospect.
I hope she doesn't.
Luke Prokop came out as gay, which is the first. Well, according to this article, it is the first active or inactive player to ever come out as gay.
I think NHL player under contract.
Yeah,
right?
NHL contracted player. Yeah, because NHL player. Gay or two active queer players in like pro hockey right now. One of them, I believe, is a goaltender in Sweden or Finland or Czech Republic or something like that, and one is a bisexual. I think he's either a forward or wing. I don't know. He's not a goalie. That's all that matters to me.
You say that on the position.
In the EIHL, I know that there was another goaltender who after retirement came out. He talked about how he just hadn't wanted, not Brock McGillis, that one we all know and love. one over in Europe. And so those two are active players. One of them, the one who plays in the EIHL, I think he plays for the Manchester Storm, something like that. And then there's a draft prospect, Yannick Duplessis, who is, I believe, in the QMJHL, who came out, what, 2 or 3 months ago? Time for the last year and a half. It's like one massive blur. It was sometime in that frame, and I couldn't tell you if it was last week or last year. I have no idea. But no, this is the first under like NHL contract, which is fantastic.
Yeah, it's really interesting to, like, I'd be interested to know if, like, this had anything to do with, was it Carl Nassib who came out for the NFL? Because, I mean, these things obviously are super important and really impactful. And like you were saying, Kat, like, you can list the amount of out hockey players in the pros, like, in the
world. Male hockey players in the pros.
Yeah, true. And so something like this could be extremely impactful in the short term. And I mean, obviously hoping that in the long term, it's, you know, less of a spaced out thing, more common for it to happen. But for now, it's something to, I mean, it's always going to be something to celebrate until it's way more commonplace. And I don't think that's going to be something in our lifetimes, but I hope it is.
Never know. Yeah, hopefully. I kind of think that I, like, not to, like, make this into, like, a social, like, development podcast, but, like, I think that way a lot of the time. I'm like, oh, we're fucked. And then I'm like, I don't know. I guess my grandfather was alive during, like, the end of World War II, and think about how far we've come. More to come, but, but like, I, you know what I mean? I, don't get me wrong, not nearly far enough, but things were certainly different in the 40s than they are now. And still a long way to go, but I think with hopefully the generations that we belong to and younger, it seems to be, I don't know, maybe we're just in bubbles, but it seems to be more widespread that people are not only just tolerant, but just like good people. So hopefully that's
the problem is like bigotry is being replaced by tolerance in some ways.
Like
instead of, you know, full on acceptance, it's tolerance. And that's another battle to be fought, but
for sure. Yeah.
And that's, I think the Carl Nassib thing did make a big difference there, because usually when there's an LGBTQ player on any team, male or female, because there are a number of female athletes who don't feel comfortable coming out, even though it's more widespread within women's sports, you have to know that your team has your back, and you have to know that your coach and your management staff have your back. Because I mean, if you look at the comment section, like, it's don't ever look at the comment section anyway, but like, don't look at it when it comes to stuff like that. The Carl Nassib thing, I unfortunately went through the comment section on one particular article and like had to put, like, I had to lock up the Twitter fingers to keep myself from responding to anyone. But I mean, usually when it comes to stuff like that, your team, at least nowadays, right, like, your team knows. I know back in the day it was don't ask, don't tell. Like, it came as a shock when people would come out. Nowadays it's your teammates typically know, if not all of them, at least a number of them. Your management staff probably knows, especially before you come out. And so I think that you have to give credit, obviously, to Carl Nassib, and then to all the queer athletes that came before them. You look at like Gus Kenworthy, and I know that one of the MLS players came out, all the female players who've come out over the years. But you also have to look at the way that the Vegas Raiders, excuse me, that's going to take a while.
That would have slipped right by.
That would have sunk this.
We have to bleep that out.
they deserve a ton of credit for how they handled it as a team, because you have to know that your team's going to handle it correctly too. Like, nobody wants to come out and have their team like let it happen, but not, number one, like, be supportive, but number two, have a game plan for like what you shut off comments on. how, what you're sharing, how much you're sharing. Cause they did, I mean, the video was shared by Carl Nassib and then the team made a statement. There's no way they prepared that on the fly. I'm sure they had that written up for a while. They had videos, they had pictures that they used. They handled it, I thought, in a really world-class kind of way. I thought that, and I think that's the first time I've ever said that about an NFL team in my life. And I think that probably gave some encouragement to players in other sports that maybe hockey's the first one we're seeing it, but that there are people who work within team front offices and media and marketing departments that are going to handle it correctly so that you don't end up you don't end up becoming a target. And you don't end up having it handled in a way that's going to hurt you. Which I think that's probably part of it too. Cause I think the Nashville Predators handled it very well. Yeah. And they handled it in a supportive way without being overbearing. And I think that's a big part of it too. We had to see that teams were going to handle it as well as the teammates did and as well as the public did.
I do want to jump in and mention how much more difficult it is for Black players to come out and do this. Having seen what happened with Michael Sam and so many women athletes who've done it. And specifically the Vegas Raiders mishandling of the George Floyd verdict kind of deal. So there's some stuff that That's everyone's true. Still working on.
Yeah. They won one thing and lost another.
Yeah, I mean, this has to be an intersectional kind of deal as well. And you have to recognize also non-binary and trans athletes who are going through it as well. And a lot of that shit's coming out right now during the Olympics and how bad that's been.
That's true. That's in the sport that I coach alongside hockey. I have been a big advocate of the fact that the running community tends to be more progressive about a lot of things, tends to be more inclusionary. I mean, I coach men and women. We don't see that in a lot of sports as often up through adult years. But the running community couldn't be handling the Caster Semenya situation in particular worse. There's no way they could be handling it worse. I think they could try to bungle it more and still wouldn't quite hit their mark. So there's still a long ways to go on a lot of that for sure.
I will say I thought it was encouraging to see how many teams beyond the Predators they like tweeted out something or just offered some kind of support. I know there's been a lot of situations in the past with other things where we had hoped, it was like, oh, when are the Bruins going to say something? When are, so-and-so going to? And it seemed like I was scrolling through Twitter. I didn't, go through each team and check, but I saw the Bruins do stuff. I saw a bunch of other teams tweet out something and just say, offer support and say, hey, we're happy to have you here and that sort of thing, which obviously is such a small gesture, and you hope there's more than just a tweet going out. But I think that is at least a positive from the whole situation as well.
Yeah, and I didn't follow your advice, Kat, and I always go and look through the comments because I do want to see how shitty people are being. And a lot of the time, there are bad comments, but also just seeing how meaningful it is for such a small gesture to a lot of the fan base. It drives home how important stuff like this is.
I mean, I know the Arizona Coyotes have starting this upcoming season. And I hope they're not the only team. I hope that I only know it's them because I used to work in their hockey development department. But their hockey development program has always had the Little Howlers, which is their learn to skate program. And then they have the intro to hockey where for, I think it's $400, you get a season plus a full set of gear plus, tickets to games. And then they started doing the Growlers this past year, which is where they have an adult learn to skate and learn to play for a similar price point. And then they've also now added an LGBTQ inclusionary Learn to Play, which is specifically geared towards giving queer fans a safe space to learn how to play together without having that barrier, feeling like they're maybe going to get pushed out by people who think that they're too effeminate to be on the ice or too weird or, you know, oh, I don't want them body checking me. So that the Coyotes announced that, I want to say it was a couple of weeks ago, and it's same price point. Players get a full set of gear. They get to learn from a bunch of former pros who obviously had to sign on for it. So we're clearly at the very least willing to work in some sort of capacity like that. And hopefully other teams are going to do stuff like that too. Because I tweeted out expecting that, you know, a couple of Coyotes fans would be like, yes, the team's got it. And it got picked up by a bunch of fans here in Arizona who I felt a little guilty that I didn't know them, right? Like, I felt guilty that I hadn't interacted with them more, who were like, wow, I'm going to sign up. Who's going to do this with me? And a lot of their friends who it seemed like really didn't have an entry point to hockey were heartened by it. And so that's true, going through and looking at the positive vibes only, right? As long as you don't read the bad comments.
We try. Good vibes. Good vibes.
We don't get any bad comments. We just get comments like
we don't get any. Speaking of good comments, Drew.
Yeah. Patty boy.
Patrick Laverty said, getting ready for another Brews and Bruins podcast episode. Am I doing it right? And it is a photo of his computer with a six pack of Miller Lite in front of the computer. And then on one side, it is our latest episode besides this one, episode 64, Adjusting to the Adjustment. Check it out. And also on the other side is DraftKings.
I love that he got the DraftKings in.
Yeah.
That's such a pro move that I would not have thought of.
Oh, yeah. I'm doing the hashtag THPN on that.
Hell yeah. Yeah. Maybe we can get some some bonuses there.
I think this has been a good episode for what we said was going to be a brief episode.
Yeah.
I specifically said that I was going to try and keep it brief. I was like, man, there's no way I'm going to push this one.
This is like the negotiating tactic where, like, we're cutting this short at an hour 22. And I was like, I can't have a 2 hour podcast episode. So I said, let's make it 30 to 45 minutes.
When you said 30 to 45, I was like, I can make that happen. Like, it's Chris's birthday, right? Like, he's got friends that aren't us that he, I'm sure, like to hang out with.
Allegedly.
I don't know. But
I was like, there's no way I'll interrupt. Like, I'll keep this brief with you guys. I won't say anything.
I've got an hour 15 until I have to be at the bar.
Oh, you got time.
Well, yeah. I'm not using that excuse to go any further. So this has been episode 65 of season 2.
Oh, wow. Car. Load. Happy birthday, Chris. Carl. Load.
Crumb.
Randy Carl. Brandon.